It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Leslie Odom Jr.'s performance as Aaron Burr in the original cast of Hamilton made him a household name.
His enemies destroyed his rep, America forgot him.
We fought with him.
Me, I died for him.
Me, I trusted him.
He is a busy man these days. Right now he's in London filming a new version of Murder on the Orient Express, directed by Kenneth Branagh. And somehow, in the midst of all that, he's coming to Iowa City to speak on March 27th. Tickets are free and available to the public at the Hanscher Auditorium box office until they run out. And I spoke with him from London. Well, I want to talk with you. Of course, most of the people listening right now are excited to hear you because they are fans of Hamilton. And I want to talk to you about that experience. One of the things you've said about Hamilton is that the show touched you in a way that you felt that you hadn't been touched since you were 17 years old and you saw Rent, and then you went on to be a part of Rent on Broadway. What do you think it was about this show that reached out and grabbed you in that same way?
Well, the music, first and foremost. There was, I think if there was something that was closely related to that, you know, Rent in its time was contemporary music that was working in a dramatic way, that was working in that in a dramatic context. And Lynn has managed to do the same thing. I mean, there's a lot of people that would love to do what Lynn was able to do, but it's a really difficult thing to make songs, you know, to make pop songs dramatic, to make a pop song keep you on the edge of your seat with anticipation is harder than it sounds. You know, pop songs kind of by design are meant to, you know, put you in a place and keep you there, you know, for 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if a song in the theater did that, you know, it'd be the most boring thing ever. You know, theater has to be constantly, it has to constantly reveal itself every single moment. And so a song like Satisfied, a song like Wait For It, where you have a pop song, but there's new information, that's a really difficult thing to do. So the music was the first thing that did it. It was so exciting that I was meeting a writer and I was meeting a piece of material that was able to do it so well. And then beyond that, I think like everybody else, I just thought it was such an ingenious way to tell this story. And so I was hooked.
I've read that at least at first you were pretty certain that there wouldn't be a place for you in Hamilton because Lin-Manuel Miranda had a creative group that typically stuck together and performed together. How did you find your way in?
In the easiest way possible. Like I was asked to be a part of it. I got after that initial time of seeing the work and witnessing what the magic of it, the power of it up at Vassar. I got an email a couple of months later saying, hey, you know, we're working on Act 2 now. You want to come and hang out with us and read this thing. So that's not a guarantee that wasn't a Broadway contract that they were offering me. That wasn't a Tony Award that they were offering me. What they were offering me was an opportunity to have an opportunity. And I was, you know, I realized that and I just tried to make the most of it every single second.
How did you connect with this character? I mean, Aaron Burr, of course, is the villain of the show. He's one of the great villains of history. Did you have a hard time connecting with him as an empathetic person?
I didn't, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but I didn't have a hard time at all. I think that the person that connected my way in was through Lynn's imagination initially. You know, when you hear a song like Wait For It, you hear a song like Dear Theodosia, that's not a writer that is, you know, I'm looking at the cues from the writer, and Lynn didn't think of him as a villain, and so I didn't. You know, Lynn looked at him with an extraordinary amount of compassion and empathy. And so that was how I saw him as well. And I just found more and more of it, more and more love for the character as time went on.
Now, anybody who doesn't recognize the historic impact of this show hasn't been paying very much attention lately. But I want to know, as an individual, as a performer, and as a person, how do you think it changed you?
I think that primarily, you know, in the most profound way it changed me was that I think you have so many of us have an idea or the belief, you know, somewhere in your belly that maybe, possibly, you're capable of something that you haven't even seen in yourself yet. You know, maybe you're capable of magic. Maybe you're capable of, you know, doing work that would even surprise you. You know, but it's just a theory until somebody gives you a chance to prove it to yourself. It's just a theory until you have the opportunity or you create the opportunity yourself, which is what Lynn did, which is what a lot of people do as well. So I think I was on the path to trying to discover how to create that opportunity myself, you know, with my music and, you know, my recording, you know, my albums and stuff. But Lynn gave me the opportunity to play this part when he handed me this role. They were giving me the opportunity to prove to myself if my theory was true. And they gave me all of the tools that you would need to get there. You know, it was just really a perfect storm. You know, the material, the environment, my other castmates, you know, the people that I was on stage with that inspired me and taught me so much. And so we were kind of all able to realize the best of ourselves in that room. It was extraordinary.
Of course, Hamilton is one of the reasons it's so extraordinary is because it really broke down racial barriers for performers. It clearly didn't matter what ethnicity the performer brought to the table. It was about skill. It was about performance. And that's how people got cast in this show. What do you think the legacy of Hamilton is on Broadway? Do you think that that's going to break down barriers for performers of color in the future?
I do. I do believe that. And I think we're seeing the, you know, the effects of it right away. You know, look at my man Oak, you know, from our cast. He played Mulligan and Madison, and he's going to replace Josh Groban and Natasha Pierre, you know, next door to the Hamilton Theater. So I think that what it was able to do was to remind people of the limitlessness of theater, the fact that we can do things that we can't do in television and film, because we don't have to be literal. We walk into those buildings and we're willing to suspend our disbelief and take these journeys. And so, you know, it's kind of like when you were a kid, you know, and, you know, when you put on mama's apron, you were mama. And when you grabbed, you know, you put on daddy's baseball cap and, like, you were dad, you know, and just that childlike belief and, you know, using your imagination, that's the power of theater. That's maybe where theater is most powerful, is when it's doing that, when it's not being literal and it's, you know, taking those kind of risks. And so, yeah, Hamilton was able to do that, and I hope people follow suit.
The show is by its very nature political, but throughout its run, it's that political angle has been amplified. At this moment in our history, what do you think it means to be able to see this story from our early history playing out on stage in this way?
I don't know if I, you know, I think whenever an artist starts talking about the meaning of a piece of work, I know what it means to me, but I would hate to define that for somebody else. What I know that it does, you know, Hamilton, that show, it's not a partisan show. You know, everybody can find love for that piece, because it reminds us an origin story. You know, it's just reminding us of where we came from, what the ideals were, and where we've fallen short. You know, and when you're looking back in that way, you tend to examine where you are now and where you want to go in the future. But it's just a reminder of how it all began. And that's when it's done, you know, Lynn reminds us with so much joy and so much humor and, you know, great affection that it's nice to look back and you know, it also presents a challenge for where we're going. But yeah, I just think that it's always powerful in a moment of great change, which we're certainly in, better or for worse. It's good to be reminded about what the intentions were and where we started, what the intentions were at the beginning.
Even though the show is really hard to access, the music is everywhere. Kids are singing these songs. We've got the Skylar right. sisters performing at the Super Bowl. Was that a kind of strategy? Because there were times when the soundtrack was free. I mean, it was made very accessible. It seemed like it was being made very accessible on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I think that Lynn and the team knew that they had something special, and that for a while at least, there was only one place to get it. You know, the only place to get where Hamilton was being doled out was at the Richard Rogers Theater to 400 people a night. So there was great excitement and great care taken to how we would make it available to as many people as possible as quickly as possible. And the soundtrack is a great way to do that, especially because the show is sung through, and there's so much of the plot, and there's so much of the characters that you're able to get from that album. So, yeah, I think quite wisely they just decided to make it as available as possible. You know, and that's not, they can't make you like it, but they can make it available to you so you can try it at no cost to you, at no real risk to you. You can give it a try, and the hope was that the work we'd done up until that moment that we had created something that you were gonna like a whole lot. And I think it paid off. I think the risk of giving it away paid off.
As I mentioned, I mean, kids are singing this stuff all over the place. And I have personally driven a minivan full of 11 and 12-year-old girls belting out Hamilton. And it makes me think about there was a study that came out a couple of years ago about how if you stand like a superhero for 2 minutes, then it changes your body. It changes your hormone levels. It makes you more powerful, and it makes you feel more powerful. And listening to these little girls sing Rise Up, I mean, it feels like that has to do the same thing. Do you think about what this music has done for people?
I'm only starting, you know, to be able to get a sense of how it's affected people and the way it's penetrated the culture and the consciousness, because my job for most of the last few years has just been to really shut all that out, to really shut all the noise off and stand in the center of the stage and do my job with as much humility and generosity as I could muster. So yeah, I had to ignore so much of it, which was okay. I mean, because we were having a pretty fantastic experience in it. You know, it was pretty fantastic experience, but it was definitely in a bottle, or, you know, in a bubble. You know, we weren't in the audience, sort of having a party. We were, you know, going to physical therapy and going to training, and you know, just trying to keep the thing the same, you know, to keep the product pure.
Since you left the show, you've released two albums, which is pretty incredible. You're making a movie right now. I just learned that in addition to coming to Iowa City on a lecture tour, you're going to be performing in Des Moines with the Des Moines Symphony Orchestra in the spring of 2018. So clearly you've got a lot of plans. What are your hopes? I mean, you've got this incredible opportunity. Everybody wants a PCU right now. What do you want to do with that?
I'm still figuring that out. I mean, I just, if I'm being honest, that was my wildest dream that I just lived. You know, if there was anything, and there wasn't much, you know, but if there was anything that I sort of was curious about after my experience in Rent was like, well, what would it be like to be at the beginning? Because I was there 2.5-3 years after they'd opened. And so, you know, most of the original cast was gone by then. And so I was, you know, I did always wonder what it would be like to be on the ground floor of a phenomenon like that, and what that experience was like. And I just lived that. I don't know if I had a bigger dream than that. If I'm being honest, you know. And so, it is a blessing, you know, just a blessing to get to sort of wipe the slate, have the slate wiped clean, and go, okay, well, you did that. What else do you want to do? I think, you know, just immediately it was just about, I want to stay creative. I want to keep learning, working with people who are going to teach me a lot. Kenneth Branagh has been, you know, just an incredible teacher and mentor, really, through this process. I've learned a great deal from him. I just want to keep sort of getting in rooms like that. You know, I still want to be in rooms. I still want to be in the rooms like that. I'm just going to keep looking for him.
Well, we can't wait to see what you do. Leslie Odom Jr., thank you so much for talking with me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Leslie Odom Jr. He'll be in Iowa City speaking on March 27th at Hanscher Auditorium as part of the University of Iowa Lecture Series. He'll be doing a performance with the Des Moines Symphony Orchestra in May of 2018.
Grandfather was a fire and brimstone preacher. But there are things that the homilies and hymns won't teach ya.
Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.